Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, editor-at-large of Recode. You may know me as someone who's not much of a maker unless making Uber drivers yell at me counts. But in my spare time, I talk tech, and you're listening to Recode Decode from the Vox Media Podcast Network. Today, I'm delighted to have Mike Sinisi and Dale Doherty in the studio. They're both hugely important to the maker movement. Mike is the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine, and Dale is the founder of The Maker Faire and more, rest of the company. Mm-hmm. This is a hugely important movement in Silicon Valley and beyond, and these two are kind of the godfathers of it. Okay, Mike and Dale, welcome to Recode Decode.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
So, and I want to talk about a TV show. You got all kinds of stuff going on that you guys are doing.
Well, we didn't do the TV
show. No, but the fact that Make is now a big deal.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Kind of a thing. So let's talk about, my kids have gone to Maker Faire and things like that. Let's talk about, Dale, why don't you start talking about sort of the background of how this started? Because Silicon Valley has, at its heart, a make movement.
Exactly. You know, long before I started using the word they were makers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't always identified
right.
to each other. They often thought of themselves as, you know, sort of tinkerers and,
right.
and things on their own. And this helped to form a community of people and say, this is kind of the way people learn mm-hmm. Technology and science and often not in school, but through just their own interests in developing
right.
that.
Right.
And I think coupled with that was, you know, the internet has sort of two qualities to it. It can make you can learn to do almost anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it also can make you just more of a consumer.
Right, right. Where you just
and what I'm really interested in is the creative side of, you know, we have this technology. We could create wonderful things with it,
mm-hmm.
or we could just treat it like television and absorb it and
right.
consume it and do more of it. So the idea of Maker really is to invite people to see themselves as makers, as creative people, any age, at any portion of their life, to just do things because they enjoy it and mm-hmm. it's rewarding and fun and
so
it actually
keeps
us together.
Tell me about the background and then I want to get to the magazine.
Well, I started the magazine in 2005 at O'Reilly Media.
Right. You work with Tim.
Right. And, you know, I told Tim in the back of a cab when I went to open source convention that, you know, I had an idea for Martha Stewart for Geeks
mm-hmm.
And just, but sort of projects.
You don't look like Martha Stewart.
No, I don't. But the idea was, you know, I think she understood that we do things,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a way of connecting to other people.
Right.
And that's
right.
really what I meant. You make a pie when people are coming over.
Right.
Because you want to tell them you made it for them.
Right.
And I think a lot of things, even technology, could be looked at that way. And in ways, Make is like a popular science or popular mechanics of the 50s.
Yep.
When there was a culture of hacking. They didn't use that word.
Well, popular science was the magazine. I remember reading
yeah.
it every month.
But popular mechanics goes back, you know, to
yeah.
the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this wonderful, broad permission
mm-hmm.
to do this and do that and do that. You know, you could make a garage, you could make a birdhouse, you
mm-hmm.
could make a boat that sails.
Yeah, one summer my brothers and I made everything that was in a cartoon and it was
yeah.
either popular science or popular mechanics. It probably
yeah.
wasn't popular mechanics. We made like a garage door opener with a tennis ball. We did rockets. We did all kinds
right.
of things, which we don't do anymore at all.
Right.
Nobody does.
Right. But I was inspired by that and wanted to try to I wanted to see if I could bring that back
right,
in some
back
ways
popular science, popular
and kind of reconnect it to the digital age
mm-hmm.
of both physical and digital things, and whether it's robots or rockets or other things. But it seemed like this, you know, I just wanted to encourage people to do it based on people I found that were already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
cool things, fun things.
So do a magazine,
yeah.
a physical magazine.
Physical magazine
right,
with projects in it and
right.
say, here's how you do that.
And then it turned into Maker Faire.
And then we started Maker Faire partly because just meeting really interesting people. And I thought, would it be interesting to ask people about, you know, here's their project. Talk to them about it. It's
mm-hmm.
kind of like an art fair or craft fair. Or, you
right.
know. science fair, really, but it's really the people mm-hmm. that inspire you. When you mm-hmm. talk to someone who cares a lot about it, and what I've also found is some makers are shy, maybe socially awkward, but mm-hmm. when they're talking about their project, mm-hmm. they open up and right. they're expansive.
Right.
And it's a great way to really experience this and be inspired to do it yourself.
Right. So, Mike, tell me about how you came to doing this. Are you someone who tinkered, or was it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I always thought that I had this unique story of mm-hmm. having that science fair type dad.
Yeah.
You know, the 50s science fair geeky dad mm-hmm. who took me into his workshop at a young age. Yeah. Well, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up wanting to take everything apart and seeing if I could put it back together again. Mm-hmm. And through the years, I realized that quite a few people actually have the same exact story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have the same origin story. And, there is this desire for, you know, for all of us to use our hands to make things.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent my whole life taking things apart and putting them together and, mm-hmm. and making things, and went to college, started on an engineering track, changed course. And then, you know, from there, this has become my focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's become my career,
mm-hmm.
you know, telling stories, helping tell other people's stories.
Of how to do things.
How to do things, you know, the inspiration of making.
Right. And so, Dale, talk to me about the idea of make, because this was at the heart of Silicon Valley. As you said, you're a maker. I think I say it a lot, actually. Either you're a maker or you're not. Like, you create things. And not just physical objects like a robot or a drone or whatever, but like companies and things, like the concept of crafting.
Yeah, in fact, I think sometimes it's really misunderstood of how this is learned. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, Steve Wozniak is a classic example.
Yeah.
The Homebrew Computer Club, where he says, you know, they couldn't buy computers, so they built them themselves
mm-hmm.
and they shared the designs. And,
wood.
You know,
wood
he says, you know, I would do it for free for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that thing that they could figure out how to do things
mm-hmm.
that was really, I think, core to this. And I think it goes back to the semiconductor industry and
tell me.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the founders, his name escapes me right now, you know, there's a great piece that Tom Wolfe, the writer, passed away this
Doug
year.
Doug Engelbart, probably.
He called the Tinkerings of Bob Noyce.
Mm-hmm. Bob Noyce. Oh, yes, yeah. That's right. It was a great piece.
Great piece.
Yeah.
And he talks about how, as a kid, he read popular science with his brothers. And Wolfe's whole point was, why did the giants of the information age grow up in small towns in the Midwest
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the large metropolitan areas? And it was, some degree, this sense of play and taking things apart and putting things together. Noyce has a quote that, you know, when you live on a farm out in the middle of nowhere, you can't buy what you want. You have to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that just sort of resonates of, like, that's in the core of, you know, they acquire that almost through practice of doing this. That
mm-hmm.
when they later go to college and things, they map theory into that practice
mm-hmm.
and they become really smart at doing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's essentially the argument for bored out of your mind. And so,
yes. Exactly.
Like, you had nowhere
exactly.
else.
Well, there's a great story.
There's theater.
Three brothers read a story about a kite that, you know, building a kite that could lift a human being off the ground.
Uh-huh.
So they go to build it, and
right.
he almost kills himself. I mean,
right.
they jump off the barn to try to get enough lift, and
uh-huh.
they drag it behind a car. But, you know, it was this idea that you don't just read something, you try to do it.
Right.
You try
right.
to figure it out.
Right.
And
right.
and I think what I kind of wanted to penetrate is, like, we read a lot about technology, and sometimes it's kind of at this abstract layer, which we actually don't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we penetrate more deeply and just understand how it works?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously a lot of our technology today is sort of wrapped up for us, and we
right.
can't open it and use
right.
it. And we've had this phrase, you know, if you can't open it, you don't own it,
right.
you know, associated with the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just encouraging people to get in and customize, personalize, change things to make it the way they want to. And that's my original insight around this, was that's what hackers were trying to do. They wanted to make it
work
for them.
Not the Russians, but
right.
go ahead.
Not the Russians, but just when we talked about hacking in a positive way.
Well, they're trying
way.
To make a change in the electoral process.
Absolutely.
So I guess that's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So.
Well, I think probably so.
That's their goal.
Right?
That's what they want to make.
Break the system.
Whatever. It's a making thing.
Exactly.
So when you think about doing that now in this day and age, because, you know, there used to be, again, all these magazines and all these ways to communicate with people. And we do know a lot about technology, but you're right, people aren't involved up to their elbows, essentially, in it anymore. It's a much more, there's a step from the way it was. So how do you then cover, how do you look at it? Because it could be looked as like a hobbyist kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that part of what we were seeing as the maker movement really started to take root was the hobbyist side of it. But from there, it's, you know—
It's like make your own pump.
Yeah, you know, and one of the great things that happened just as the as Make was launching, there were various technologies that came about that really helped democratize technology, made things easier than ever before. Prototyping, electronics prototyping, Arduino being one of the hugest ones. Open source electronics that suddenly everybody could do if you wanted to create, affordable, easy, and with these growing huge communities of people that could all contribute and help you learn how to do something without going to 12 years of of engineering, electrical engineering school. And so from there, you know, we've watched this go from hobbyist into education, and then from there now, you know, it's influencing beyond that into the professional career world. You know, it's become vocation.
All right, let's talk about that concept of it becoming, because when you go from hobbyist, when you have these kind of, this is what you create, one of the things that I think, and we'll get into these topics in the next sections about, you know, 3D printing and how people are going to manufacture in the future. How do you, when you think about where it's gone, where you, we have to move from an hobbyist to doing it, even as there's more and more makers, there's less and less reason to make. I get, you know what I mean? Like everything is provided for you.
Yeah, I thought of that a lot. It's, you know, probably our parents or grandparents' generation, you know, growing up during the Depression, you know, they made out of necessity.
Yeah,
right?
Completely, and continue to do it.
And even in other parts of the world, that's still a dominant mode of, of thinking. But what I saw around this particular, given the internet and other things, that we were making as a form of self-expression, that this said something about us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just like writing
a
blog.
Even desktop publishing, right?
Yeah, exactly. All those things. You know, and you think about early Apple computers. I mean, people using desktop publishing, graphic arts. Oh, I could make a newsletter. And this, it was really the creative use of technology for your own purposes. And what just seemed to be what Mike was talking about is now there was just new components that could be mixed and put together, and software actually could connect this stuff together. And I think a lot of what's making this possible is that the software's kind of embedding a lot of the expertise that you used to have to learn to do something like, you know, computer-aided design. You could kind of do it without being an expert at it. So that does start with hobbyists who expect, but I think it broadens to the broader population that amateurs can do things that professionals used to do.
Absolutely. And when you're doing that, talk a little bit about the concept of magazine, because a magazine is something people don't make anymore. Like they don't.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, but niche magazines still have their role out there, and I had, you know, I'd done the first commercial website in GNN in 1993, so I knew
God,
the
you're
web.
GNN?
Yeah, I started it. But, you know, when I looked at this, what excited me about this versus other O'Reilly things are a lot of code, books about code, this was visual. And so I thought, well, let's try a magazine, and kind of designed it to be somewhat like a collector's item that you keep, and it's evergreen content. It's
like
sometimes
magazine.
Stupid, I'd say, to do a print magazine today. But I find that there's still a real appetite. People, we have a digital edition. People prefer the print edition. And even among kids, there's a kind of a different psychology around some of this. But it's at the same time that we do a Make magazine, there's lots of resources online, people using YouTube and Instructables and, you know, many, many sites to find out about how to do things.
Right. So how do you approach that when you have a magazine versus a – I'm thinking my kids use YouTube a lot to find cooking. My one son cooks a lot. The other likes to watch video games on Twitch and things like that.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting with making Make is that the hardest part about doing it is selecting the content. There's no shortage of maker content that's out there. It's become such a big community, and they're just cranking out projects nonstop, and they submit a lot of stuff. You know, all the makers. It's nice to be in Make magazine. So that part that's our big challenge. You know, what how do we select the right mix that tells the right story, that we've got the, you know, the story arc. We're not a news magazine, and, you know, as Dale's saying, people, they hold on to their collections. And right. So you know, we want to give them something that fits into their library.
What would be the news from Make? Oh, my God, some pumps are in because people think the world is ending. I don't know.
New 3D printer.
Make your own, like, whatever the crisis happens to be.
Well, yeah.
Make your own non-flammable something right now in California. But what we'll talk about that. I want to know where things are going, actually.
Sure.
But go ahead. Sorry. So when you're doing this, you have to think.
It's like a cooking magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like figuring out what's what. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather look at the Cook's magazine.
You know,
you're right.
Is just it isn't just the recipe. There's a little romance around it of like, what's the story? Why do people do this?
Right.
And usually, I have to say, our things are not beginner level necessarily. They really are aspirational for a lot of people, like a travel magazine would be. I'd love to go there. I'd love to do this. But I think people learn because of that. They figure, how did they actually do that? And my goal is that they apply that to something of their own.
Right.
You know, they don't do necessarily the project in the magazine, but I figured out how they did that. Now I could do something independently.
All right. When we get back, we're going to talk about some of the things they're making, actually, which is on trend and what has changed and things like that. We take a quick break now. We'll be back in a minute with Mike Sinise and Dale Doherty. We're talking about the maker movement.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
This week on The Gray Area, writer Derek Thompson makes his case that everything has become a cult. Well, almost everything.
Is Taylor Swift the closest thing we have to a mass cult today?
No, I think she's the closest thing we have to Christianity.
It's me.
Find out if you're in a cult this week on The Gray Area, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm here with Mike Sinise and Dale Doherty. Mike is the editor of Make Magazine, and Dale is the founder of the Maker Movement. The founder. That sounds very
heavy. I don't know about the founder.
All right.
Of the movement.
So talk a little bit about what's trending. Now, Mike, why don't you start? What is now ascendant in making? I'm looking at you. You brought me several magazines. One is Connected Everything. It's one of those things, that those robots.
Yeah. So this is, that's our newest.
I was married to a maker once.
Oh, that's great.
It was irritating.
Anyway,
they had a lot of these things around the house.
Yeah, I do too.
Cyberpunk. Yeah, look at this. The pocket oscilloscope, the Raspberry Pirate radio, the voice changer, the mini voltmeter, and an LED glove. All right. That's okay.
That's a good list.
All right. Okay. AI or die. Oh, my God. Look at this.
That's a great story. So that's Mike and Lisa Winter. They are BattleBot alums. They're a father-daughter duo. They've been in doing combat robots on TV for the last 20 years.
Okay.
Since she was 13. And their newest endeavor is this competition to see if a human-controlled robot can best an AI, an autonomously controlled robot.
That.
And so Mike is building the AI side. Lisa is on the human controlled side. They've built an arena and now they're conducting tests and
having
battles. Who
do you think's going to win? I say the human one.
I think at this point, the human still. But, you know,
they're going to ultimately, the technology, AI is going to treat us like cats kind of thing.
Yeah.
So talk about what's hot now. On here, let me look. Robot motor basics, vinyl cutting stickers, get to know your miter saw. That is like, that's a little saucy.
Well, that's a little saucier.
Yeah, to know your miter saw?
You got to treat them with care.
Okay, all right.
And
I would never not treat a miter saw with care. But explain what's hot. Tell me what's hot now, and then I want to hear from you, Dale. What do you think is the trend? AI, obviously.
Yeah, AI is hot. Connected, you know, everybody wants to talk about IoT.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there are things, you know, this is now.
Explain for the people what IoT is.
Internet of Things. It's, connected devices that, you know, create something, you know, create a garage door that will open up when it detects that your car is entering
right,
your cul-de-sac.
Right, or a talking refrigerator or whatever.
We're probably not doing talking refrigerators on the maker scale just yet. But I'm sure somebody's working on it.
Right. So they are.
Yeah, they are.
They're in Korea. They're doing that. So they actually are. I'm not joking about Korea, but that's
and,
what they're doing there.
You know, beyond that, you know, one of the big things that right now we're working on are our digital fabrication issue, which we do every year. And it's 3D printers, laser cutters, water jet cutters are coming in.
Explain what it is.
Yeah,
all right, first of all, 3D printers or printers that print 3D stuff. And there's a big debate, which we're going to talk about, is making guns.
Right.
Right,
yep.
Which has been the big, like, that's all of a sudden every TV show. Yeah. Like, can you make guns and print
right.
them?
Yeah, the story, yes. it's back, actually, because yeah. that story was around
right.
6 years ago. But,
okay.
So you got 3D printers, additive fabrication. You're creating
Explain
things
that.
Out of plastic. But it's you have a digital file, it's a 3D CAD file, and mm-hmm. You're able to export that to a printer that, then, you know, depending on what type of technology you're using, it will create layer by layer physical rendition of what your object is.
A plastic version of it.
Plastic. Yeah. Or, in some cases, nylon. Well, nylon's a type of plastic, but steel. And some of the machines are using ceramics and so
right.
forth.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's a big thing.
That's then. A big thing.
Okay.
But, you know, beyond that, and that we've been tracking that for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
We're watching laser cutters become accessible, affordable, and much more easy to use than ever before. And that's something that has will be a big part of our story for this next
laser
issue.
Laser cutters in your
laser
home.
Cutters like in your home.
Personal laser
personal
cutter.
Laser cutter. Yeah, and they're great.
I'm still worried about scissors, but okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're fast. They're precise. You can do some really fun things with them.
Right.
But the next thing, there's a couple of companies that have now come out with personal water jet cutters. Which
okay, explain that.
Is it's a technology where it's been around for ages
mm-hmm.
in the industrial level.
Right.
High pressure, really precise jet of water that can cut through anything.
Wow.
You know, thick steel, wood, fabric, leather. You know,
and why would you want a water one versus a laser one? Or?
Well, lasers are useful for certain material types, you know, wood and plastics, and you might do some light etching on metal, but mm-hmm. you're probably not going to be able to afford a laser cutter that can do metal cutting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The water jet cutters are, you could, you mm-hmm. know, I think we're talking in the $6,000 range, which
oh,
is,
yeah.
you know, it's cheaper than a Harley, which
right.
some
okay.
people like to buy and have
right.
for their hobby.
Yeah.
You know, now this is something that instead of having to go to the industrial side of town with your big project and try to source a huge thick sheet of steel, you can cut anything, you know, in your garage. Well,
metal.
Yeah, metals is one of the big things. You'll see people doing a lot of artisan work with it. The hobbyist knife makers.
I see. Yeah.
They'll be jumping all over this.
Right.
And then you'll see people that are doing industrial projects.
Industrial.
Yeah.
All right, Dale. What do you think is hot?
Well, just go back to AI for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things is it's in some ways these cloud connected devices mm-hmm. can operate pretty simply
mm-hmm.
and then use the cloud to have a lot of the processing power.
Mm-hmm.
So things like face recognition
right.
and things like
we'll
that
get to
are,
that in a minute,
are just really instead of programming it into the device,
mm-hmm.
it's just a service out of the cloud from
right.
you know, one of the big companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, there is a vision of the world that's like, here's one device that's in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another vision where there's lots of different devices. And you kind of see that around cameras
Meaning.
In your home and
right.
all these things. And so they can all be connected and do different things. And
mm-hmm.
and it's not that hard for you to figure out. And I think one of the things that's interesting that we cover a little bit in the magazine is it's also possible to create solutions to problems that don't seem very important to other people, like
right.
businesses.
Right.
So, you know, assistive technology,
right.
you know, something for the blind or mm-hmm. or a person that's confined to a wheelchair. They have a specific problem and
that they're never that a mass group is
right,
not going
to
fix.
That the company's not going to form and create a product around it, but you know, in a makerspace or something that they can solve for that, or students could do that for them.
Right. Right. What else do you think is exciting?
You know, I think the most exciting things are actually in education
mm-hmm.
that the way I would have never kind of predicted 5 or 6 years ago
mm-hmm.
that we would be getting maker spaces into lots and lots of
yes,
schools.
There are.
And some done well and some maybe not, but this is not coming from a federal or state level. It's
mm-hmm.
being brought in by teachers. I always think it's a little bit the analogy mm-hmm. like school gardens and things that
right.
someone thought it was important and they start to build it and put
what
time
makes a
into
good
it.
One?
People,
right?
You know, being a place where there's a feeling of community and support and welcoming, and you can learn there
mm-hmm.
rather than I already know what to do. Leave me alone. I'm working mm-hmm. in the corner.
Right.
So, and often I think the bad maker spaces, you know, buy the equipment and they figure out the space, but they don't figure out how to how to staff it or
right.
or how to really get people in there doing it.
Doing so.
But it's really a very different way of learning that most kids have not had that exposure
no,
to.
They used to.
And this is the whole thing about this is something that used to be mainstream. You know,
home
as late as the 60s.
Shop
class.
I had shop class.
Yeah.
And I almost cut off my hand. But that's another.
A lot of people, it wasn't that you were going into a trade job, but you learned to do things. And for people, I'm really interested in the kids, not that are at the top and they're going into the top schools, but mm-hmm. really the two-thirds of the kids that don't even know what they
right,
can do.
Right, 100%.
Right? And this is where making, I think, really is
absolutely.
Finding a home. It's an alternate way of learning mm-hmm. For spatial thinkers, for people with special needs. They can actually watch someone and do something and do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, we have makerspaces in juvenile halls.
Right.
And these are largely kids that are truants that are not going back to school, but they think of themselves as failures.
Right.
And when
they can
make and learn
right.
and say, I'm able to do something, even creatively, that really changes.
Interestingly, a lot of those professions are actually highly employable, too.
Exactly.
Like, it's really interesting that, like, I was talking to my plumber yesterday because there was an issue in my house, and I was just, you know, I was asking about his background and how he got into it. For some reason, we started talking about it. And I never really had a conversation with him about it. And it was really an interesting, and I thought, wow. And he makes a lot of money doing it. It was a really interesting thing. And I was thinking, and he, you know, he knows I write about tech. And he said, oh, is my job being replaced? I said, no.
Exactly.
No, actually. Yeah. You're actually okay. And
yeah.
he's like, oh, phew. And I'm like, no, really. I don't see how you
no.
don't need a plumber. Like, you know, I guess you could digitize part of it, but it's very hard to digitize some of these maker
really
jobs, yeah. which is really interesting, which
it
was
is.
To me electrical stuff and things like
and
that.
And I think it's really kind of plays into sort of this workforce mm-hmm. idea around here of how do you develop people that way. And schools really aren't concerned
no,
with
not
that.
At all. Not and, at all. Do they have shop classes in schools now?
It's very much on the decline.
It's the first thing
yeah.
that they...
Maker spaces are a way of reinventing it, making it better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's often not just that they have or don't have the equipment. It's really the imagination around how
absolutely.
It's used.
No, 100%. I still have a mail holder that I made in eighth grade, and I enjoy
exactly.
it to this day.
But that's the point.
100 years later.
You know,
works just fine. Plexiglass. I molded it. I
you did
cut it.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And
no.
it means a lot to you.
Super
and that's that
ugly.
Expressive power of the object that
yeah,
when you create
ugly,
it, it means something.
But I still got
if
it.
Someone wants to do it, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, high tech machines like in a makerspace in Boston, a fab lab. And you know, kids from the neighborhood were making stuff, but they were using the screen printer. And I said, well, you know, why do you know, just focus on the screen printer? I said, well, they're making T-shirts.
Uh-huh.
And they wear those T-shirts out in the community. And someone comes up and says, where'd you get that? And he says, I made it. You
right.
know, and it's like that changes
oh, 100%.
The way they're thinking.
We actually did that at Code this year. We had people making their own T-shirts, which is interesting. So AI... printing, 3D printing, drones, gotta be hot.
Yeah, right? Drones, you know, the thing with drones is they came up through the maker groups.
They did.
And, you know, just a few years ago, the only way you could get a drone would be to build your own.
Right.
And now it's the technology's progressed so much, and a handful of companies came in like DJI.
DJI.
And they've created these little micro aircraft that are well beyond what almost anybody could try to put together in their garage. You know, the amount of engineering and technology that's inside of these things is pretty staggering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really fascinating case study of like watching
something move.
Yeah, well, you know, seeing something go from garage tinkerers to major industry.
Yeah, and there's this really progression that we can see historically of things starting off as like kits, and then long before there were ever products, the first kit computers, right?
Right,
before
sure.
that you could buy a computer. And I think the drones, 3D printers are the same way. They're really, again, 3D printers were available in the industrial market for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And some makers said, we want one of those ourselves. We'll build
right.
it. And that's how the RepRap
right.
project started. But it evolved into a kit and then became a product made by a few people. And now it's pretty much a consumer product,
right?
It's like in some ways out of the maker space purely.
Right. That's moved beyond.
But it's moved beyond that. And drones are kind of the same way. So we kind of see those things move through.
So what's in a kit now? What's...
Robotics.
Robotics.
Yeah,
robotics,
yeah, robotics kits are still...
Though there's still all these robotics companies,
yeah.
which are still are seeing, like, Google yeah. selling theirs, but...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing with the robotics kits, a lot of those are for education.
Yeah.
You'll see, you know, and I think it's great because it's a great way.
You've got robotics on this cover.
We've got robotics. Yep. You know, we've got robotics in pretty much every issue of Make.
Let's Robot. Is that like a verb?
Let's Robot is one of the most wonderful new platforms that came out. So that's Jill Ogle on the cover there. Yeah. And she created this new...
She's the mother of robots.
Yeah. She created this new platform, an online platform called Let's Robot, letsrobot.tv. It is a network of DIY telepresence robots. You go into this and you can control them yourself. So, and it's controlled by groups. So you're kind of, so you're wrestling for control of these robots, but you can go into the Make office and we've got one of those bots rolling around. And it's got, they've got microphones and speakers.
Can they hear what I'm saying?
They can hear what you're saying.
They can hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let's just assume that, Dale.
Yeah.
Dale.
And but
catch
you know,
a clue, Dale.
It's just hitting my shoes. I don't know.
No, Dale. It's there to steal things from you, including all your and your soul eventually.
Exactly.
So just so you know. So one of these things on here is RFID fingernails.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a fun project.
Please explain.
Tanya Fish, a great maker out of the UK, she embedded RFID chips into her fingernails.
All right.
So that she could activate and program them to activate your door opener for your office.
So embedded stuff in human beings is fascinating to me.
Yeah, yeah. So this one,
she's just putting it in a fake nail, right?
Yes,
right.
That is right. No. Yeah.
I want something in my neck.
But the neat thing ASAP. With these ones is that the electrical signal actually... it activates them, so when she goes near an RFID transmitter, they light up. There's LEDs inside of them. So her fingernails start to glow.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
And then hovercraft, obviously. Is that a bit? Because, you know, you got Larry Page working on Kitty Hawk and stuff like that.
Yeah. This one's that's a fun one. That's one of those whimsical RC car type projects to make and to have fun with it.
Right, but not yet. All right, we're going to talk about where innovation is going when we get back. We're here with Mike Sinise and Dale Dougherty. Mike is the editor of Make Magazine, and Dale is the founder of the Maker Movement. We'll hear more from them after this break.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
We're here with Mike Sinise and Dale Dougherty. Dale is the founder of Make, but he is also the godfather of the Maker Movement. How about that? Do you
like that?
That's good. All right. So we were talking about all these different things. And again, the only thing I could make in this magazine here is the easy rubber band helicopter. I think I could manage that. But most of these things, like, 3D printable doggy cart. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's for a dog that doesn't have legs, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Assistive technology.
Assistive technology. And there's all kinds of things. LED party shoes, this water jet cutter, which I think is fascinating. Braille embosser. All kind of audio oscillators. I'm just trying to, the Arduino, obviously. So is our country more innovative than it used to be, or is it less? Because a lot of people feel we've lost our innovation to China and other areas. Or is that, should we even be talking about it that way? Dale, come on.
It's a really good question.
Yes, you know, I'd like a very good answer.
When I think, on one hand, other countries would love to be as innovative, at least how they perceive it. China... you know, and I think we often misunderstand where innovation comes from.
Okay.
And I think one of the core ideas I had in seeing the makers initially was it actually, in my view, originates in play in a sense that things can be changed and who cares what happens. I'm just experimenting. I'm learning. what something can do and, mm-hmm. and what it can be. And I think that is the origin of innovation, not some formal practice or going to school for it. It starts in your own, you know, thinking, thought process and doing things and learning mm-hmm. what you get from that. And so, but it also takes place in our culture where we recognize and support it. And that's really what I'm trying to do in Maker Faire is to celebrate it. So in China, you know, being different isn't really necessarily welcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would love to have, you know, those devices that they're manufacturing mm-hmm. designed in China.
Right.
But creatively, they're not yet coming from there. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, you know, when you have a sort of homogenous culture in China, how do you get this creativity? And I think when they send their kids to school over here, they think it's the schools teaching them. I think it's actually the culture teaching them mm-hmm. how to think differently mm-hmm. about different things that we don't all agree and we push and shove.
Are you worried about that innovation, given everything is so plug and play?
Yeah, I think I'm worried about a generation that thinks that Amazon is the answer to everything for them.
And
you know, to some degree, innovation comes from a place where you figure, you know, here's the difference in China. They can make anything they see and make it in greater numbers more easily. Mm-hmm. They're terrible at figuring out what doesn't exist, mm-hmm. right? And that's the creative part of this. Someone once said to me, they're great at 1 to 1 million. Mm-hmm. They're terrible at 0 to 1.
Right. And they're getting better.
Yeah, and they will get there.
Right.
They will definitely get there.
Right.
And I think our culture, you know, is kind of resting on its laurels a bit. And I think mm-hmm. as we sort of have this culture of very big companies controlling lots of money.
Yep.
It's hard, I think, to have these, you know, Silicon Valley is a little bit its own thing. One of the things that's interested me a lot is the maker movement's kind of spread everywhere, and it's everywhere that it spreads, it's local. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real different model than everybody has to be in Silicon Valley. It's say, well, mm-hmm. what are the resources, the community, and the ideas that you have there? And I think that's where I'm hopeful that innovation mm-hmm. can take root and come at it differently. That we might have small businesses instead of startups. We
right.
may have,
right.
you know, people that make a good living doing something, but they're not billionaires.
Right, right. right. No, absolutely.
And that's my hope here. Is
yeah, because for every startup that's not successful, there's
exactly.
a zillion that aren't, and then everyone loses.
And if we could
it's a lottery
shift
system.
A little bit of that, has a country
yes.
have policy to enable more small businesses, not, you know, even these small cities that right. want to be like Silicon Valley pump tons of money into that and ignore the small businesses that
I agree
are growing
completely.
Up
there. I think one thing that everyone has to be is entrepreneurial.
Yes.
Period. Going forward, you
yes.
cannot not be entrepreneurial. We've got to somehow teach that, and it doesn't mean like you're going to have a hot startup and be Mark Zuckerberg. It's that you're
right.
going to have a business that makes
exactly.
a certain amount of money, you know,
and it's hard,
right?
Right.
It's
not. It's. I think that's the issue here. And even you know we've seen people that start as a hobbyist and then they, you know, the classic story I get from Maker Faire is mm-hmm. someone came up and really liked what I did, so they asked if I'd sell it to them, and
right.
I'd never thought of that, so I go home and figure that out.
Right, right.
And so
that's what you want.
Yeah, and I think that leads to a logical, hey, I have customers, I can build something they want, I can get paid, and we don't necessarily have that logic here.
Right. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that we've got some good examples of companies that are coming up through the maker community mm-hmm. That are highly innovative and really successful. You know, things like Adafruit mm-hmm. and Little Bits.
Explain Adafruit. Explain
Adafruit is a manufacturing company that's based in New York. Mm-hmm. They're in Manhattan. Lamore Fried, who's an MIT engineer, she created a electronic components company out of her mm-hmm. dorm room mm-hmm. and is now one of the, I think she's they're the largest manufacturing company in New York. They're big. Everybody that is making something, every hobbyist maker to the professional side are using Adafruit products. Mm-hmm. And then you got Little Bits, which is Aya Badir's company. Mm-hmm. Series of magnetically clickable
yep.
components.
I've got a lot of them in my
great,
house.
Great. Yeah, so you know it.
I have a son who's a maker.
Okay. And
he's got to stop making, I got to tell you.
Yeah. And, you know,
there's a cardboard box. There's something going on.
Nice. So, yeah, you know, both of these companies are really successful. I just read that Form Labs, mm-hmm. based up in Boston, mm-hmm. they just got $1 million value or $1 billion valuation. They are a 3D printer company.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going
to
add
a resin printer, which is a really different process.
Yeah, they're taking a different approach to how they do 3D printing,
right.
and suddenly they're worth $1 billion.
Yeah. Do you imagine everyone will have a thing in their house where they make things? And not Star Trek, that food is suddenly made out of... They can do that, obviously. I've seen cookies and stuff like that.
Not immediately. Yeah. It's a very slow process.
It is. You got to get the bags of crap to put
I think it's still, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when the web comes along, you say everybody's going to create their own website. And they did in a way.
Yeah, and then they didn't.
But then they didn't.
Then some people did.
And I think this is how, you know, technology sort of bumps along sometimes with, you know, well, if you really want something made, you're going to find someone who's good at doing that and pay them to do it.
Right. Well, like Amazon. So how do you resist that Amazon?
Oh, it's hard.
It's hard, right? It works beautifully.
Yeah. I mean, for me.
Why even bother going to the store? I try to go to stores and they never have what I want. And then Amazon always does. It's really kind of.
Yeah. Shopping is not what I would like to do with my free time. So. Yeah.
There's a little nursery in my town. And
which town is that?
I live
north of San.
I live in the East Bay. Right. I live just east of Richmond, and little nursery called Adachi, and you know, mom and pop shop, been there for 60 years, closed down last summer, and it broke my heart, and it made me realize I need to make sure that whenever I have the option, I'm going to these types of places.
Right.
And, you know, so that's made me rethink the Amazon thing, and it's made me rethink the, you know, the big box stores.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm trying. I'm one guy trying.
I wonder what's worse, the big box stores or Amazon.
Yeah, I don't know.
I got to say the big box stores. I'm going with the big box, you know. Although you wonder what's going to happen to all those retail jobs.
Now I'm trying to go to the big box stores. Now that my nursery closed, I'm going to Osh. Because I'd rather have my neighbors that work at Osh have that job, and I can go there and I can get, you know, I can get my tomato seeds than...
It is interesting to think about. So let's finish up talking about this this show that's coming on. There's a maker show now, right? I mean, you think there's a return? This is a Amy Poehler and what's his name?
Nick Offerman. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think it's great. It's it's a testament to the, you know, the concept that, you know, making is mainstream.
Right.
You know, if it's the two of them are hilarious.
Yeah.
So, I mean, first of all, you've got that. And so it's, you know, whatever they do is going to be great. But, you know, it's really thrusting this concept, this hands-on, let's be creative, let's express ourselves. And, you know, let's feel good about the stuff that we make and do into the, you know, absolute mainstream. It doesn't get more mainstream than network television.
No, it doesn't. But do you think that gets us more to a place, Dale? Do you?
It's a good question. I don't always think so. It depends a little bit. You know, it's kind of like you were saying, that's a little bit like Project Runway in terms of its model.
Right.
So, you know, how many people thought of being a fashion designer? And when they
see
other people, the cooking shows, and some people say, well, that's approach. You know, I could see myself doing that. Mm-hmm. And they kind of start with gourmet chefs, and those channels end up taking ordinary people and thrusting challenges at them. So it can help change that kind of thing. And, you know, I always say that it's, you know, what I like about cooking, or when you mentioned baker, you know, it's like things you can do yourself are meaningful. You don't have to be the best at them. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the top chef kind of person. But if you do it at home and you're good and you enjoy it, well, that makes your life better. Right?
Yeah.
And so I think that can help, you know, say I could do that. I have something I'd like to do that. And so that's, again, when we think of Maker Faire, it's just we don't think we have like stars or celebrities at Maker Faire. We just have kind of ordinary people that do things.
Who's a celebrity at Maker Faire?
Yeah, nobody.
Everybody.
Right. Maybe Adam Savage comes on Sunday and gives a talk. He's closest.
No, I know who he is.
But
why is that? Why?
Well, it just worked out that way. Yeah. We call it the Sunday sermon from him. But, you know, I think people like to hear from him. I think he's inspiring. And and for a lot of kids, they map into that space. There's a new show coming out, Mythbusters Jr., that I've heard about. So, you know, that...
Wait, they're having one of kids? Mythbusters?
Yeah, Adam Savage and a team of children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, blowing things up. Man, I can't wait.
I tell my kid about that.
That is probably the real show. That
he's funny. Yeah, they're funny. Yeah,
like. But it's like, you know, I think one of the things is I have a goal that this sounds outrageous, but in some ways I'd like to see making as important in our culture as sports is.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is something that's celebrated, you know, and by our society. It's in our community. It's in our families.
Right.
And everybody gets to participate.
There's robotics competitions, but they always degenerate into wars.
Yes.
Like, it's fascinating. They have to make They have to make it into wars rather than tasks.
Right. We always say, like, Maker Faire is about exhibition, not competition so much, that creative work doesn't necessarily compete against each other.
But I see why they would do it to attract people to it, right?
Yeah. And there are kids that really like the, you know, sort of competitive robotics side. But
right.
obviously, like, I'd like to have a competition where robots make me laugh or right. they do stupid things that you wonder how they do it.
Yeah. Right, right, which is interesting. It does degenerate into wars. Yeah. It's always robot wars.
Offensive and offensive categories.
Yes, exactly. Right. Or needlessly complex. I remember being at an agenda one year and there was a bunch of guys making a robot. Like, they were trying to, they had to pick up a bunch of ping pong balls or tennis balls or something like that, and then the fastest and get back to home. And a bunch of guys were over designing it, and this bunch of women designed it. All it just did one simple task, and it didn't. Then they won. It was very funny to watch. It was, but it got super complex. Yeah. Like, it was fascinating and to watch the thing. But that was a real competition, but actually an interesting one to watch.
Actually, when you say that, it makes me think of your question on innovation. Mm-hmm. Is I think one of the other answers is that really innovation can come from anyone,
right?
And we want to create a culture where there are fewer obstacles for that those
right.
people, and
right.
and. That, I think, is what we're trying to do in the maker movement. It's like everybody can think about things very differently, and they don't have to be experts to
right.
figure that out.
Exactly,
right?
Which I think there's a gating mechanism to a lot of tech that
exactly.
keep it out. And I want to end on that. We just have a few more minutes. But one of the things I've noticed, there's a lot of women on your covers. Is it
still— The year of the women.
Right, I get that. But is it still a dude yeah, fest?
It is.
It is.
Well, I think it's changing. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's—
Well, there's a lot of women involved in robotics, for
yeah,
sure.
There I mean, I, always has been. I think, you know, statistically, you look at things, you know, you might see it one way. But, you know, we have probably 40-45% women at Maker Faire. Mm-hmm. And I think—
that's higher than
yeah,
most
yeah,
averages.
I know. It's partly because we have families.
Right.
We're a family event. And we want this mm-hmm. idea to be approachable mm-hmm. in that context. And we see, you know, parents who want to get involved because their kids are learning something, and then mm-hmm. we encourage them to get involved too. But I think you're also, you know, we've been at it about 15 years almost, and so you're beginning to see some of the impacts that this
right.
is more accessible, this mm-hmm. isn't, you know, and certainly there are women say that there's still these obstacles and there's, mm-hmm. you know, that shouldn't be, or they go mm-hmm. into engineering programs.
Right.
But, you know, I think culturally, I think there's some progress to be made.
Mm-hmm. And not just women, but people of color.
Absolutely.
Lots of
stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So yeah.
And we see that around the world, too,
right.
with, you know, just the different places that Maker Faire is happening.
Well,
and
there's talent and everywhere.
Exactly.
That is such, it's such a canard that there's talent. It's just they don't have the, you know, I was telling this, I forget who I was being interviewed by, and I said, I know there's a little girl in a small country, a person, a little girl of color somewhere who's going to solve cancer, and she'll never do it because she's not able to. She's
right.
gated in some way. And we are missing these opportunities if we don't give people the ability, the tools to do this.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point.
Yeah.
And that's why, back to the sports analogy, someone once said to me in Atlanta, like, especially you're a boy, you know, you can't grow up without playing football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they force it on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it doesn't matter where you
well,
live in the city, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, well, why don't, you know, why doesn't everybody get the same opportunity here
right.
to play, you know,
right.
to engage and
right.
try this? And,
yeah.
and
well, this is something you don't have to they
don't,
big or small to
right.
play.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and especially if they enjoy it, they'll keep doing it on their own
right.
as well as in organized settings.
Right. Anyway, last thing, what's your favorite project this year, each of you?
I got to go with this, the Let's Robot. Let's okay. Robot TV. It's just such a hoot to have this thing mm-hmm. rolling around the office, and
yeah.
and you know that you know, this one woman, she's created this platform that anyone in the world can they can create a robot and
mm-hmm.
and have it broadcasting, and anyone else can control it. And there's
right.
actually some funny stories in there of them going on television
mm-hmm.
and shooting ping pong balls.
Mm-hmm.
Having their community shoot ping pong balls at TV hosts.
Oh, all right, good.
Yeah,
I like that. And yours, Dale?
Well, I kind of like this. This it's called Matthew Moore is a community mm-hmm. college professor, and he basically takes, you know, a selfie of you
mm-hmm.
and explodes it into a huge image
mm-hmm.
that is comprised of all these small LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the Columbus, Ohio Convention Center.
And why do you
in
like
there.
It?
You know, it just almost plays with this idea of identity and culture
and
today
selfies,
and
yeah.
selfies. And you know, that almost like in place of statues, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's you know, it, we're cycling through the people that you know, are walking through that convention center.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really critically important. I was saying, with my plumber, for some reason, a gasket was left on the floor. Like, I didn't know what it was. And I sent him a picture of it. I was like, do we need this? Did we leave out the screw? We need it.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's a gasket. It's you can throw it away. It's not important. And it was fascinating. I thought, that is my, it's an old gasket. You don't need it. And I was like, why don't I know what this is? Right. Like, it was really fascinating. And I was like, then I, of course, know everything about gaskets right now. But it's a really important thing to understand in this sort of age of continual removal of ourselves. You know, we get immersed in technology, but we remove ourselves from it and just become creatures of it, that we not do that.
Well, yeah, it's a struggle. It's
because,
by design.
You know, one of the most striking things I ever had happen, Van Jones, well, people was at Glide Memorial, I was talking to a bunch of young kids from the city, and he said, how many of you download stuff from the internet? And they were all sort of like, this idiot, you know, of course we do. Everybody downloads stuff from the, you know, onto your phones or songs or movies or consume things. And he said, how many of you upload stuff? And I was really moved by what he was saying, and none of them raised their hand. He said, you've got to upload stuff, because if not, you're a creature of them. Like, you don't have a say in it. And it was such, and these kids, they thought they were so smart in making fun of them, and they got it. They understood that they were just consumers and not creators. And it was such a very, it was, I thought it was one of the smartest things I've ever seen.
That's a core message.
It was. It was.
And I remember when I saw the iPad came out, and it's like, here's, you know, it is just a consumer device. There are no tools on it when it first came out to really create through it.
Right.
You know?
Well, now it has more. Yeah, you saw their recent commercial.
Right.
Their commercial's wonderful,
but, you know,
actually.
The old Apple had HyperCard and things that were really broadening the creation capabilities. Yeah. And it was more like, well, you just consume all these things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll hopefully not so going with you guys doing it. Mike and Dale, it was great talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show. When is the next Maker Faire?
In New York, September 22nd and 23rd at the New York Hall of Science in Queens.
Okay, and it'll be, how many people will be there?
About 80,000 people.
Okay. Yeah. All right, then. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can find more episodes of Recode Decode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, or just visit recode.net/podcasts for more. If you have a minute, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and tell other people about the show. That helps them discover great interviews like this one. Now that you're done with this, go check out our latest episode of Recode Media. You can find that show wherever you found this one. We make a lot of shows here at Recode. Thank you for listening to this episode of Recode Decode. And thanks to our editor, Joel Robbie, and our producer, Eric Johnson. I'll be back here on Wednesday. Tune in then.